This is episode 12 of the Super Cool Stuff Show for October 13th, 2008. Welcome to the Super Cool Stuff Show. I'm your host, Terry Bartlett. And this week I have a pretty exciting show planned. I'm going to be joined later with two of the guys from the Totally Rad Show, Jeff Cannata and Dan Trachtenberg. It's actually a pretty long interview, so that's going to be the meat of the Super Cool Stuff Show this week. But before that, I'm wondering if you guys have seen Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live impersonate Sarah Palin. Because it is really, really good. So good, in fact, that I decided that I'm going to coin a new term for whenever a comedian impersonates a political figure, and it is absolutely perfect. That term is Tina Palin. I know that that may sound vague, Tina Palin. How could you use that in a sentence at all? I'm glad you asked, because I've come up with a few sample sentences to demonstrate how this new term could be used. I mean, there's the obvious one where you're referring to Tina Fey playing Sarah Palin. You can ask your friends, hey, did you see the Tina Fey sketch last night on SNL? Things like that. But outside of that, you can use it to mean any comedian portraying any political figure that you think is going to be absolutely spot on. For example, you could say, have you seen the trailer for that new movie W? It looks like they're totally going to Tina Fey George W. Bush. See, totally works. But with that said, I would like to talk a little bit about the sketches, because Tina Fey is absolutely perfect as Sarah Palin. It seems impossible that this should happen. I mean, it seems strange to begin with that the vice presidential candidate is somebody that looks practically identical to a famous comedian. You'd think that would seem like a bad move on the part of the Republican Party, but they thought it was a good idea. And I'm glad they did, because it made these sketches possible. But I think it's absolutely cool what Tina Fey's doing, because she's actually not a member of Saturday Night Live anymore. I'm not sure how many people realize that. But she has been guesting on practically every episode this season of SNL. 3 out of 4. And every time she's been playing Sarah Palin. The first time was her with Hillary Clinton / Amy Poehler. The second time was her doing an interview with Katie Couric, played by Amy Poehler. Then the third time was the vice presidential debate. Every one of these have been incredible. And honestly, it's a little scary how spot on Tina Fey is. And by that, I mean she's absolutely making fun of Sarah Palin by making her seem not so smart. But whenever I watched the vice presidential debate, I saw uncanny similarities between Tina Fey and Sarah Palin. And Sarah Palin was clearly trying to make herself look smarter. But in my mind, I thought that she looked a lot like Tina Fey portraying her. But I do think that it's very cool that a comedian such as Tina Fey can portray a huge political figure like Sarah Palin on a show like Saturday Night Live. And by that I mean, I think it's cool that there's women in politics and amazing female comedians get to have the pleasure of being an icon on a show like SNL. Because if you think back to the different portrayals of presidential figures, be they potential presidential figures or actual presidents, you kind of remember all of them, or a good majority of them. And I think it's just because they shaped our culture as a kind of way that we viewed that candidate, for better or worse. And many of these candidates were almost two-dimensional in our eyes as Americans, but whenever they were on SNL, we got this image that was immediately grained into our head as to what that person was like. And that is kind of what Tina Fey is doing right now. I just think that it's really cool, and I'm a huge Tina Fey fan now especially. I've loved her for a long time now, but now I'm in love with her as Sarah Palin. So that's that. Like I said, a busy show with a long interview from Totally Rad Show guys. Need to be getting into that, but, you know, Tina Palin, use it, say it to your friends. But till then, time for the interview. Interviews. This week for the interview segment, I have two of the coolest guys that I watch every week on Revision 3's show, The Totally Rad Show, Jeff Cannata and Dan Trachtenberg. Say hello, you guys.
I'm Dan Trachtenberg.
And I'm Jeff Cannata.
Okay, so I kind of didn't want to do this because I know that it's cliche and you've already told the story online, but I feel like I have to do it to start the interview because it's so easy to do. How did you guys get together to make a show like The Totally Rad Show possible?
Well, okay, well, I was doing a podcast before I started Totally Rad Show called Geek Drone, and Alex, of course, was doing Dignation. But by daytime, I'm a commercial director, and I was shooting some commercials over a weekend, and I had a day free and the gear and all that stuff, and I was like, oh, I'd love to do a comedy spot, but I'm not funny. And I watched the show Dignation all the time, and I know that Alex is an actor in Los Angeles, and he's hysterical. So I contacted Revision 3 and said, hey, would you guys want to do a Dignation commercial? Really trying to get to work with Alex and exploit his sense of humor. And that happened, and I directed a commercial for Dignation. I hit it off with Alex, and at the time I was doing Geekdrome, and Alex basically helped me get Geekdrome on Revision 3. And then when that was ending, we had all become friends, Jeff, Alex, and I, because we met playing Dungeons and Dragons, which was something for some reason all of us wanted to do growing up but never had the opportunity to do so. So we formed a little group, and in that group was me, Alex, and Jeff. And we all sort of hit it off right from the bat. I remember Jeff was wearing a Superman t-shirt, and I was like, I want to hang out with that guy. And and we became friends, and then when Geekdrome ended, we talked about maybe doing a show together with us, you know, talking about, you know, movies, comics, video games, TV, and all that stuff. But we wanted to do something a little bit more special. We wanted to do an online show. You know, we wanted to sort of, not to just be a podcast, we wanted to be a show. So we talked about things we could do to make that happen. And luckily, Jeff was friends with Steve, who's our producer, camera guy, editor, post guru. And he gives the look and the identity to the show. And he became the fourth member, basically.
Okay, so one thing about this interview that's going to be a little bit different than the other interviews I do is I typically ask a lot of the bands, I say, you know, do you have any advice for up-and-coming bands? Well, this would be for up-and-coming podcasters, which I happen to be. So instead of asking you the broad question, throughout the interview, I'll be asking you kind of specific questions of just things that are running through my head right now because I'm getting ready to move on to do other things. And I'm wondering what, you know, pushed you guys to do what you did to get to where you are now. So I'm going to start out, because you guys all live in L.A. now. I think most of you are from the East over towards where I'm from. Is that right?
Not me. I am a West Coaster, born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, went to college at UC Santa Barbara, and moved down to Los Angeles.
Okay, so we'll just ignore you for this question,
West Coast
Jeff.
All the way.
All right. So Dan, what? Because I've thought about what cities I want to move to, because I know that I need to move somewhere bigger if I want to do broadcast and all that kind of stuff. What made you decide on L.A. as the place you wanted to go to pursue, you know, your dream of filmmaking and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I grew up knowing this was what I was going to do in terms of I wanted to make movies, you know, so the directing career. I knew that that's something that I wanted to do since I was very little. And my brother is an editor. My brother edits commercials and had been doing so since I was, you know, in high school. And he lived out in Los Angeles. So I spent a lot of time going to Los Angeles growing up. And I really loved it when I was first coming to LA because it was more vacation-y. I did work a lot. I sort of started out as a production assistant and then was gripping and then was PAing for a post house, working in the vault. So I sort of saw all angles of the city. But because it was socially more of a vacation, I really enjoyed Los Angeles. And I also spent time in New York. I went to the New York Film Academy before going to film school in Philadelphia. And those are sort of the only two options you have if you want to get involved in the film industry. It's either New York or LA. And New York, some people really creatively draw off of activity, you know? And for me, I found it very creatively draining. I sort of work off of quiet, you know? I like to daydream and drift off and work off the hustle and bustle. So LA really was the alternative for me, so.
It didn't sound like you said drift off. It sounded like you said jerked off. Just saying. I don't want to.
Well, I enjoy both those activities. So, I mean, you know, I'm a big proponent of if you're going to take your first steps, take them in the right place. And LA is definitely the right place. And I wasn't too happy when I first moved out here socially, because it is a town where every cliche you've heard about it is true, but eventually you find your niche, and I found Jeff and Alex, and it became a really great place to be. So, and the career started happening.
So I guess I won't ignore Jeff completely for this question. Clearly there was a move involved from where you lived to where you are now. And I know you did a lot of acting, too, because you've talked about doing plays and whatnot.
Definitely.
What drew you to L.A. in the long run?
Well, I had a similar binary question that Dan had, you know, New York or L.A. And just like he was mentioning, the same thing is true for actors. You have two choices, basically, New York or L.A. And I was always very drawn to New York. I'm a guy who loves doing theater and working on stage. And so I was very much drawn to New York and always flirted with the idea of moving there and living there. But never really was able to pull the trigger, and a lot of my friends in college moved down to L.A., and I sort of did that also and came down here and started working in TV and film and doing commercials and still doing a lot of plays, but little by little, my life sort of grew down here. And I think that ultimately it was a good decision, but I agree with Dan that a lot of what you hear about L.A. is absolutely true, and it can be a real tough adjustment for a lot of people, but it's where you need to be if you want to be in the entertainment industry, I think. I mean, there are, especially with the rise of the internet, there are ways to do it anywhere in the world, but where it's happening most, where you run into the types of people like Dan and Alex, I would never have met people like Dan and Alex anywhere else but Los Angeles. And that's exciting in and of itself. You know, you're around a community of people who are all, you know, Dan actually says this a lot, that you can do this stuff anywhere, but the people who are really serious about it move here. So if you want to be around the people who are really serious about doing what you want to do, you need to move to either New York or LA. And so, you know, I always really took it seriously and wanted to be creative and wanted to create content and wanted to both generate my own and get hired in other people's. And so that's what led me to move down here.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about podcasting, because clearly you guys will have a little bit of a cheerier outlook than most people in the journalism world. But what direction do you think the media is going? Because I can see a clear shift from the traditional media to the online media. People are beginning to consume their media online. But there does seem to be a clear community that does that more than others. Do you feel like eventually one day there will be a direct shift where people are exclusively doing their stuff online? Do you think TV and radio will still be around?
When you talk about two different groups, I think you can draw a real severe line age-wise. I think it's a generational thing. And I think that we've talked a lot before about how we envision a whole generation of kids growing up now that aren't going to even really delineate between television and radio and internet. And it's not going to be about how you get your media, it's going to be what the media contains. It's going to be irrelevant to kids growing up today. You know, I have a little nephew who's 3, and when he's in his teens, he's not going to care how he gets his media. It's all going to be movable from device to device. He's going to get it however he gets it. He won't even care that it's cable or it's on the internet or anything. It's all going to be delivered to him any way he wants it. He's going to be able to watch it any way he wants it. And the only thing that's going to matter is if it speaks to him and he's interested in it. And I think that's where we're headed as far as, you know, the difference between online and television or radio or whatever. It's all about that whole long tail idea of, you know, our show is something that's has a very specific audience, but that's audience, regardless of its size, is no more or less relevant than any other audience. It's just very specific. And when you have an ability to get any kind of show you want, you can find the exact show you want, the show that really speaks to you. And I think that's where the future is.
Yeah, I mean, like at sitcoms, too, like The Big Bang Theory is clearly geared towards a specific audience, but it's on mainstream and it is successful. So, I mean,
yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think that any of these shows, you know, you have these huge hits and you have smaller hits and all that is still going to be very much important for how many eyeballs are getting on a certain product. You know, it's definitely in a advertising-based product, it's definitely important to get eyeballs on the product. But having said that, I think that it's not going to matter how the product is delivered to you. There's not going to be I think that's the important thing, is that there's not going to be a delineation in how much money it took to create the product, you know, where something that's, you know, you talk about Heroes or something on NBC costs a hell of a lot more than, you know, Dr. Horrible that was delivered online. But I don't think people who watch one or the other have a much, you know, there's not a tangible difference in how much one is enjoyed over another. People can get just as much enjoyment out of an inexpensive thing than they can out of a very expensive thing if the inexpensive thing speaks directly to them.
You know, I think that will constantly change. And I'm just sort of looking to history, and I'm thinking about the film industry that we started just exploring the medium, but eventually we hit a point where it was a big affair. You know, we had the big Hollywood spectacle movies. And then we had, in the 70s, we had the really gritty, you know, auteur, down and dirty, low budget, very personal, speaking to a niche people films. And then in the 80s, it was back to gloss again. And it was big spectacle Schwarzenegger movies. And that sort of carried out through the 90s until the big independent movement started, you know, with like Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino and all that stuff. And then films became smaller and more personal. And now we're at a point where it's independent films are becoming studio films. So I feel like it's constantly a wave of saturate, you know, it's like it's new to be big and glossy. So we eat that up until we get sick of it. And then we want just down, dirty and cheap. And we eat that up till we get sick of it. And then we want glossy. You know, I feel like it's going to constantly be this. So right now we're loving reality TV started becoming prevalent. And then the internet and YouTube and immediacy and finding just your niche interests. And we're getting that now. But I wonder if we will then be over that, you know. That could be our future, is sort of a saturation of this kind of thing. So I always wonder, I don't know, I wonder if podcasts have become more popular over the years or rose in popularity and are now dwindling. I don't know.
I know that from a media, somebody that started out as a radio guy, that media always adapts because, you know, the radio used to be TV back before TV existed, you know, because they had radio dramas and that kind of stuff. And then TV happened and radio switched to doing music primarily. And then media, you know, radio still existed as a form of media. And then, you know, I wonder if TV is going to have to adapt to things like podcasting, which is, you know, becoming a new prevalent media. Because I do feel like there is an audience for it. And I know that whenever I miss a show, if I don't have a DVR, I do go online to like the NBC website and watch shows that they have video of online. So, I mean, there is clearly a place for this media. I just don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Well, we've certainly gotten feedback from a lot of people who have written us saying, hey, you know, with Revision 3 content and all the other stuff I can find online, I've canceled my cable. So, you know, that is a reality.
And one thing too with me doing podcasting now,
true.
Like a year ago, I don't think I would have even considered doing podcasting as something that I wanted to do as a career because I just didn't think that it was commercially viable at all and that I would have no future in it. But whenever I look at things like Revision 3 being successful now, and I see that it really, it's not easy to get advertising possible. And it's possible to make some kind of a living doing podcasting. And I think that that's what shows me that there's something to it. You know, like, I think that I could possibly have a kind of a future in this that, you know, a year or 2 years ago, I wouldn't have even considered.
And the thing that's so cool about it, it seems to me, is that it's truly a meritocracy. You know, it's based completely on if people like what you're doing. You know, it's not the kind of thing where, you know, you have to please some suits in some room somewhere. If you are putting stuff out on the internet, it is completely based on if people dig it. If it's good and you find an audience, you will be able to find success. There's no impediment to getting your stuff in front of an audience's eyes. I'm sure that's exactly what Jonathan Colton told you. You mentioned that you'd just interviewed Jonathan Colton. I mean, he is proving that point better than anybody, is that here's this guy who's just putting out stuff to the world and living on it. His audience is funding his ability to create art. And that's completely because he has a one-to-one relationship with his audience. There's nothing in between him and his audience. And that's
I talked
incredible.
To him a lot about this, too, and I can talk to you guys about this, because you happen to have the same demographic, which is kind of the geek crowd. Do you feel like that helps you guys to have a following online? Because these people that love to consume their media online loves you guys and loves Jonathan Colton and things like that, and they fully embrace you and want to help you to do better. Do you feel like that helps you a lot to have success in this field?
Well, it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg kind of thing, because, you know, these are the only people that would be able to find us because, you know, that these are the people that get their entertainment on the internet, and we create information on the internet, and so it's a little bit of you know, which came first. But we are they, you know, they are what we are. So we said this a lot too, is that we're only making this show because we couldn't find this show. You know, we wanted a show like ours, and we weren't able to find exactly what we wanted, so we made it. And I think that's the power of the internet, is that the people who are watching it are usually the people who are making it, and so everybody knows everybody's sensibilities.
And I think I relate to that too, because I hate to keep talking about me, because it's supposed to be about you guys, but I feel like that's kind of why I decided to do podcasting, because, you know, I like to interview bands, like to do interviews and stuff, and nobody does it anymore. You know, MTV doesn't interview musicians, and it's just kind of going away in mainstream media, so there's a place for me to exist. And that's what I love about this media, is that anybody can make anything they want and give it a community.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to Totally Rad Show, because we've went off base for way too long. And one thing I love about your show is, like you said, you know, you guys are three regular guys that love the stuff that all of us, your viewers, love. And what I love about the show more than anything is the dynamic that you three guys have, because I think that it would be different for anybody watching. For me personally, I love Alex because he's so, you know, out there and crazy. I like Dan because I feel like I could hang out with him and be his friend. And what I like about you, Jeff, is that you get on my nerves. You feel like the kind of friend that I feel like I would debate with all the time about things that wouldn't matter, but at the end of the day, we would have fun about it. And I feel like probably anybody who watches this show has a different reaction to each of you guys. Is that something Connie and I can talk to you about going into it, or did it just happen?
Well, I think that everyone receives us differently. So, you know, we certainly don't, like, you know, I certainly don't try to be the guy you could hang with. I'm sure Jeff doesn't try to be the guy who gets under your skin. But, you know, and the great thing is, the reason why it's like, you know, I know what you're asking, because I've thought about, like, it's to me, I feel like we are the perfect match for each other, you know, that, like, there is someone who agrees with every word Alex says and hates what Dan says or Jeff says, you know. And there's someone that eats up what Dan says, sees eye to eye with him, and can't stand what that Jeff dude says or what Alex says. You know what I mean? Like, we sort of represent – we scare – you know, we – and in all the different genres that we talk about, that changes for people. Like, so we sort of cover all the bases. And, you know, in what shows like The View try to do as well, we didn't sit out doing that. We just sort of did it. That's just sort of who we are as friends. Yeah.
Yeah. The where it was a conscious decision, you know, you said, did you plan that or did it just happen? Where the planning comes in is that we really plan to be ourselves. You know, we're very conscious about being honest. And what you're seeing is an honest representation of what we really feel and how we really disagree with each other or agree with each other. And I think that to the extent that people associate with what we're saying comes directly from how they perceive it to be what we really believe. And that's really the only way you can be calculating about it, is to say you can calculate your sticking to your guns. You know, it would be a terrible show, I think, if I said, hey Dan, what do you think of this movie, and Dan says I hated it, and I go, well, I loved it, and Dan goes, oh, you know what, you're right, I loved it too. But by being really honest and sticking to our guns and speaking from, for lack of a better term, the heart, you know, for speaking from where we really, what we really believe and being authentic that way, I think that's where people associate with us or can latch on to something someone says and say, yeah, yeah, I agree with that, or I vehemently disagree with that, you know.
Okay, so one thing that I wanted to talk about that's a little different yep. than normal questions is one thing about the way that I talk. You know, I've met a lot of people in my life that they don't know how I talk, but they kind of throw me into different categories because of who I am. Like, people say that I talk like a punk rocker, which I don't, and some other things just because they can't pinpoint it. And then one day I was watching a featurette on the Buffy the Vampire Slayer DVD about Buffy speak, and I kind of realized that that's exactly what I talk like. And then whenever I watch the Totally Rad Show, what I love is that Alex probably speak fluent Buffy speak, and you probably picked it up from them, Jeff. Is it? Do you have that problem too? Like, people don't know where you've got your colloquialism, but it's from the media that you consume?
I don't think there's definitely a large group of people that don't understand me when I fumble for my words and find that way to communicate, because that's my way of doing it. I don't think I got that from any sort of media, but, you know, there are those people that don't get why I, you know, say things the way I say things, and there's people that totally identify with how I communicate. So, but I don't think I really pick up the way I communicate from my friends more so than media. I wish I picked up, you know, there definitely is a, you know, Joss Whedon has a way of writing, just like Aaron Sorkin has a way of writing, just like some other writers have really strong voices. And I wish that I had acquired that, because it's so smart and so clever and witty, the way Joss Whedon writes. So I more pick up on my, like, I'll say things the way Jeff says things now that I've hung out with him. I'll say things the way Alex says things. I know that I've rubbed off on the guys as well. Like, I feel like I steal from all of my friends in the way they speak. But stealing from Jeff has really helped me communicate more lucidly. So that's a good thing.
I see you to say. That's exactly what I was going to say in answer to the question, is that I think it's scarier how much we've all picked up from each other rather than necessarily from one particular.
Well, honestly, I would hope that you haven't picked up the way you talk from the Shield, Jeff.
Yeah, I would be much gruffer, I believe. And off the hook. Loose cannon.
So to take
perhaps.
You guys out of your element a little bit and put you into my element, which is music, I'm sure a lot of people are curious, what kind of music do you guys listen to? Like, what's in your CD player right now? Or your
do you have a CD player? I've been listening to far less music these days, because I've really been listening to a lot of podcasts.
Me too.
But I got into, you know, I grew up listening to, like, pop. I grew up listening to, like, new age music and movie scores, honestly. And then in high school, I shared that CD player then with pop punk and emo. And that sort of translated into indie rock in the later years. You know, the last stuff I was listening to was there's a new Rat-a-tat album that I predict you may be aware of, Terry. I don't know.
It's awesome, actually.
Jeff, I didn't know you liked them. Really?
I do, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Somehow I managed to hear something that has been made in the last 5 years.
I don't know. I do know there's a new Mogwai album that I almost bought, but it's not on iTunes Plus. And I use those guys a lot for, like, scoring, temp scoring, commercials and things like that. So I got to get it if it's on iTunes Plus. I'm debating on it. I have to find out if I was going to Twitter that today, actually, to hear if that's worth picking up. But I'm an indie rock guy a little bit. I listen to I don't even know anymore. Who did I used to say that I listen to? I don't know, dude. Horrible answer to your question, but.
Yeah, I listen to more NPR than I do music, honestly, and that may be nerdy of me to say, but yeah, podcasts and NPR. When I do listen to music, I'm very kind of an old soul, I think. I love Prince. I love soul music. I love R&B. I mean, well, that sounds really. I love rock too. I mean, I'm a child of the '90s, so I like Pearl Jam and
that kind of stuff. The Beatles, you know. More recent bands, I really got into the Decemberists.
There you go.
Yeah. That's not so embarrassing.
Yeah.
What else? What else have I been listening to?
I'm going to my iTunes to see if – where is that, like, recently played or top – no, it's not.
MT, I listen to them. They're recent. Charles Barkley. But more often I listen to sports talk and NPR when I drive. And when I run, the only really times I'm listening to stuff is when I drive or when I run. And when I run, I can't listen to music. I find it distracting and throwing me off. So I always listen to just podcasts when I run. So music has fallen out of my life a little bit, and it's a shame. You know what when I listen to music the most is when I'm playing Rock Band or Guitar Hero. So the Rock Band Guitar Hero set lists are my musical choice.
I have noticed a lot of my friends know a lot more songs after Rock Band and Guitar Hero came out.
Yeah, totally.
I know that Dan's interested in filmmaking, and that's why he's the guy that does the movie segment. But, Jeff, what was it that had you to do the video game and the comic segment? Are you just really into those more than the other two guys? Or, you know, what was the thinking there?
I think that's pretty accurate. I used to review video games professionally, actually, when I was pretty young. When I was 14, I got a job writing as a freelance game reviewer. And
Jeff was qualified journalist on the show. He was qualified reviewer. He's a resume in it.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, so I mean, I have the history in the industry. I mean, I was reviewing computer – I was reviewing video games when it was dorky to play video games, you know. I was the guy reviewing, like, PC games and stuff in the real early 90s, late 80s even. So, yeah, so I have that sort of pedigree, but I think it comes down to the level of passion. I think all of us are really into video games. All of us are really into movies. All of us are really into comics now. So there isn't a disparate level of interest anymore, I don't think. But I think when we started the show, those were our specialities. So that's how it all worked out. And I think that I'm the one who most closely follows the video game industry, and I think Dan is the one who most closely follows the movie industry. And honestly, the way things have worked out doing the show is that I used to go and look at all the movie sites daily, as Dan does. But now I mostly rely on Dan to keep me updated. And I think we've all kind of fallen into that a little bit, where so much of what our show is being having fresh opinions or unprepared reactions to news and stuff that we don't honestly – sometimes we don't even really want to know what we're going to talk about before – the host of that segment brings it up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of that kind of letting the person who is in charge of telling you the news kind of tell you the news. So
I think it's too, it's more so than a passion for the subjects. It's Jeff to video games and comic books. Jeff brings this sort of historical knowledge because he grew up with the passion for it in a very specific way. We certainly all played video games. We all played the same video games growing up. But Jeff followed the industry and followed the creators of those things from a very early age. So he brings with it the sort of the cause and effect of why things are, and why the games that I'm playing exist, and who made them and what they made before, and that all informs everything. And he brings that to comic books as well. We all love doing this stuff, but everyone brings their own unique sort of historical knowledge of each segment that sort of forms that are specialities. It's my scientific specialty.
Right, I'm going to wrap this up pretty soon because I've kept you guys for way too long. I think I'll do the TRL thing for the 90s and ask you guys to kind of sell the Totally Rad Show to guys that hasn't seen it before that you think would, you know, dig the stuff that you guys do. And we'll start with you, Dan. You get, you know, a little bit of time.
Man, I said that I had this good once, but, you know, if you grew up loving Star Wars and playing Super Mario and reading Spider-Man and watching X-Files or Buffy, whatever, you know, and you loved hanging out with your friends talking about it all, that's our show. You know, movies, comics, video games, TV, we geek out about it every week, and And that's what it is. That's what it's all about.
I don't think I can do better than that. I think he did an excellent job. You know, we are what I like to say is that we put the enthusiasm back into Enthusiast Press. We really are into this stuff, and if you're into this stuff too, come and hang out with us for an hour a week.
I thank you guys so much for talking about, and I would like to say again that it has been so surreal to talk to you guys and have stuff in the world of media that I watch you guys do every week, and now I've experienced it. So this is a huge thrill for me. Thank you guys so much for stopping by.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for taking the time
to
talk to
us. Keep up the good work. Totally Rad Show is amazing, and it comes out every Tuesday, right? There's a new episode out every Tuesday. And check it out, Revision 3.
That's right.
And all that stuff. So thanks, guys, for stopping by, and I'll probably talk to you later.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Sounds good.
Recommendations. Before I get into my recommendation for this week, I would first like to issue a challenge to the fans of the Totally Rad Show that I'm sure is listening to this podcast right now for the interview that you just heard. I don't know if you looked at my website, but it's a little bare bones right now. My website, again, is supercoolstuffshow.com, and I would really, really like a logo for my website. Nothing too fancy, just something that's not plain text. I know that the fans of the Totally Rad Show are amazing at making things like this because I see it every week in their backgrounds on their show. So, what I'm asking is if one of the amazing viewers of the Totally Rad Show would be up for helping me out and just making me some kind of a logo for the Super Cool Stuff Show. Because I'm just starting out, and I absolutely suck at Photoshop, and I would just like a little bit of help. And I would appreciate anything I can get. If you could help me out with that, just send it to fans@supercoolstuffshow.com, and I'll definitely look at it, and I'll probably use it on my website as somewhere, and other ways fans can get involved with the show. You can send me an email, also at fans@supercoolstuffshow.com. If you happen to have a podcast of your own, or work for a college radio station, or the like, you are more than welcome to use any of this podcast, especially the interviews, because I know that sometimes it seems like interviews are harder to get than what they really are. Or sometimes you may just be intimidated to talk to these people that you look up to. So I'm more than encouraged ripping out these interviews and using them for your own stuff. You don't really need my permission for it, but I kind of would like to know about it just, you know, so I can hear your stuff and check out other cool people that are doing things like I'm doing. And you can send that email to permissions@supercoolstuffshow.com. And of course, I would love, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I would love for you to subscribe to it. There's a link at supercoolstuffshow.com on the left-hand column. You can subscribe with iTunes or use the RSS feed, whichever you prefer. And also, if you want to help me out, and I would love any help I can get, I have a donate link on the site on the right-hand column. And I've talked about this before. I don't care if you donate a dollar, 50 cents, whatever. I would love to get some kind of a donation just so that I know that people care about what I do and want to help me out. And that, the same goes for the logo. That means just as much to me as any kind of monetary value you could give me. I would love to know that people are listening to this and that people really care about what I'm doing. Because like we talked about in the interview, the only way to really get feedback and to be successful in this industry is to get feedback and to know that people like what you do. And I would like to know that people like what I do. And again, all of that is at supercoolstuffshow.com. But to get to the recommendation for this week, at the top of the show, I talked about Sarah Palin, Tina Fey, that kind of stuff. I would like to recommend registering to vote if you haven't yet, because the presidential election is coming up very soon. And I strongly believe that my generation, the younger generation, will be what determines the president this year. And I would like to help anybody at all to be able to vote this year so that can get a president in the White House that will be able to make change for the country that will help us. It can help our economy, can help all that kind of stuff. I don't want to get too political, but I do believe that our vote will matter this year more than it has for a long time. So I want us to get out there and vote so that change can be made. There'll be a link on the website right under this episode to somewhere where you can register to vote. You can register to vote pretty much anywhere. You can do it on Xbox Live. You can do it at the post office. You can do it when you apply to get a driver's license. All that kind of stuff. But just do it. And that way you can vote come the time for the election. Because it is so, so important. With all that said, thank you so much for listening to the Super Cool Stuff Show. And for the Super Cool Stuff Show, I'm Terry Bartley. Catch you next time.